The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here this morning. What is it, Wednesday? Yeah, it's Wednesday.
What?
Yeah, turn your microphone on.
How did it become Wednesday? Already?
Okay, fine.
Already. Yeah, that's training camp starts this week. A lot of teams start Thursday.
Mm. So. Yeah, well, let's hope Tom Brady can get back in shape. Because right now it doesn't look good.
He was body shamed.
I know.
Did you see that? He was being body shamed.
Yeah. It's like, arguably the greatest quarterback ever in football. And that's what they have. That's what they have on him. He doesn't look
like,
good without his shirt anymore.
You look like a 40-year-old man.
Yeah.
Well, he is.
Yeah. He's going to play till he's 90. But that's the world we live in, right? You can't take your shirt off on the beach anymore. By the way, many of us shouldn't ever.
Well, that's the whole thing about the guy who went to the Planet Fitness and took his clothes off.
Naked man, and said, naked, you know, yoga
and,
guy.
And said, well, we're supposed to be non-judgmental. And same thing. We're not supposed to body shame anymore. Tom Brady gets body shamed.
Well, there's one thing about, you know, trying to get full body shame. And taking off your shirt at
right.
the beach.
Right, that's right.
Slight difference.
There's a difference between full body shame and partial body shame.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I lived on the beach for 3 years in Navarre, Florida,
right.
between Fort Walton Beach and Pensacola.
Mm.
And my experience there,
right?
I remember stating it when I was on the air. I was doing music radio then.
Right.
Stating that from my intense research on the beach, we should not be advocating that women take their tops off. We should be advocating that men put their shirts back on.
Yeah.
Because I hate to say this. I know we're told that we shouldn't body shame and that the human body is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
From my research, and I did intense research, about 99%.
Looking at a lot of men without their shirts.
Yeah, well, and women. Mm-hmm. Well, women with their, you know, just
what?
Body.
What?
Oh. No, body types.
Okay, I see.
And just the attractiveness of the human body overall.
Right.
For 99% of us, myself included, no, we're an ugly species. We really are.
Ladies, he's single.
See? That's why. They look at me. And they immediately, they're body shaming me with my clothes on.
Is there a soyfarmersonly.com? I mean, do they break it down into that? Because I'm thinking of a dating service you might be able to join. You
soy farmers
know, for farmersonly.com. Soy farmers only. We don't want other farmers.
Well, they have to be more
specific. No wheat farmers.
They have to be more specific because I haven't seen one of their ads saying farmers and others only.com. No, wait a minute. You can't say others.
Well, it's like Simply Orange, which I love, by the way. But it's Simply Orange plus pineapple. No. Now it's not Simply Orange. Simply Orange plus pineapple.
So there you go. All right, we were talking about the promotion of Democrat socialism and what Cory Booker said last hour on a couple of things and also Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. I want to get to this call because this is the call that always comes up when we talk about socialism, and it's easy to answer. We go to James in Atlanta. James, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, James.
Yeah, you guys always talk about socialism and how bad it is, but there's elements of socialism that we have already, like public schools, for instance. If you think about it, it's really socialism. If I don't have a kid, why is my tax money going to educate somebody else's child?
Ooh, so you would support that vouchers then, James, right? The vouchers.
That's cool, but vouchers is still, at the end of the day, is still government money coming to pay for the
right. No, it's, well, it would be my money.
Right, but
where does the government get their money?
Let me answer this question, because socialism is there are degrees of socialism. There is, and that's the point we've made it clearly very many times. That's why I wanted to go to your call, because we've made this point before. So we hopefully don't have to make the point again for a couple of more months on the show. There are degrees of socialism. Socialism is the government control of capital. And there are degrees of socialism. And what you see, for example, you see that people look at the federal government and they see the constitutional duties of the federal government and what the founding fathers thought that the federal government should be in charge of. Most conservatives still today, there hasn't been a poll. I'll say most conservatives 10 years ago believed that the federal government should not be involved in education, that should be a state, that should be a state responsibility, and the federal government should stay out of it.
It should be funded, though.
That's not the point. That's not the point that government shouldn't have some role. It's the degree of socialism. If I believe that the government should only take 10% of my income, and whatever the government wishes to do, for example, the necessary constitutional responsibilities of the federal government, and, 10% federal government, 5% state government, whatever it would be local, that anything the government does, I wish to be closer to me, but I don't think that the government should take more than 20% of my income. Is there a difference morally between somebody who believes that and somebody that believes that the federal, state, and local governments should be taking 98% of your income? Is there a moral difference between believing that the government, number one, as soon as you have a government, you need tax dollars, so you have a degree of socialism? That's a given. It's the degree of socialism that exists out there. You're trying to make the point, as many people do, that wish to promote socialism. And by the way, this was on The View yesterday, that if you agree that government has any function that should come from taxpayer dollars, therefore it makes it a low-level degree of socialism, then anything goes from that point on. And that's not true.
Right, because it begins on a false premise. If you look at socialist society, socialism is the government having the control over, essentially, over those dollars, over that flow of money. And that's what that is.
And the greater control of dollars by the taxation of people, the more things that government get involved in, and the more inefficient many services become, because government believes that they should be the monopoly that is taking care of it. So mm-hmm. we've dealt with this before, and so we deal with it very quickly, because it's a boring argument.
Well,
it's a boring argument, and it's a disingenuous argument that, well, since government exists and therefore socialism is when the government gets involved in anything, then they should be able to get into everything, because if you believe in that amount of socialism, then you must believe in total socialism. No, there is an understanding from most people that government has some basic roles. Even conservatives and libertarians believe that government has some basic roles. It is the control of government, which is, and the control of you by government, by confiscating your money, mm-hmm. because your dollars that you have at the end of the day is how you get to experience the opportunity of freedom. Money relates to the freedom to be able to do things that you wish to do. If you want to get into all the theoretical concepts of socialism versus capitalism and freedom and a representative government, and then how socialism leads to communism, which also is a great discussion to have. Socialism is the government control of dollars, which when they get to the point of having so many of your dollars, then gets into the point of taking over industries. Maxine mm-hmm. Waters, remember mm-hmm. stating that the oil company should be nationalized. Mm-hmm. The belief that the whole medical care system should be government run, which then gets into communism. That's more than socialism. That's government.
That's control of the industry.
That's government. That's government taking the control of the actual industry. So the goal is you're never going to get rid of a government. a government's going to be there. There will always be, even in the most libertarian society, a small degree of socialism, because the definition of socialism is the government control of capital. If they control any capital, then you live in a society that is, you know, minorly socialistic, and then you move up depending on the what they tax you and the government control of capital and regulations as to how they control the dollars. So there's a difference between somebody believing that the states and local government should be controlling the schools, then to the point that all schools should be government run, there should be no private schools, all hospitals should be government run, there should be no private hospitals, and then getting to the point of as you see with with socialists out there that believe that we should go back to the federal government taxing 90% of people's income, and then the state and local governments taking the other chunk, where somebody who's a millionaire only gets to keep 5% of their income.
Yeah, that would be, again, that control and that ultimate control of capitalism,
right.
Of capital,
right.
Capital in that society. That is socialism.
But it's a false premise, and that's why we want to deal with your call. To say that if you believe in any government, you believe in socialism, therefore anything goes.
That's false.
No.
That's false.
No. And that's why we break it down into the belief of, okay, I believe the government should only take...
Well, because that's it. That's to say, well, we just, at this point, it's almost like the Elizabeth Warren argument. Well, we just disagree on the numbers. I want 90% of your wealth, and you want to keep 90% of your wealth.
Well, the value in there for somebody who, at least from my point of view, I don't know other people's value, but my point is, if somebody makes, just use a clear figure, $100,000 a year, and the Democrats, or the socialists, okay, the Democrats, wish to take $80,000 of that $100,000,
mm-hmm.
where the Republicans wish to take $20,000 of that $100,000,
mm-hmm.
which in one case leaves you with $20,000, and the other case leaves you $80,000, $60,000 difference. That's $60,000 and the potential of what you could do with that as an individual, and the freedom that it gives you is the morality of those that do not believe in socialism. You get the freedom to choose what you wish to do and the products that you wish to buy and the life that you wish to live, and government has less control over you and your ability to do the things that you wish to do. And that's where it comes in.
Well, it's the difference between, again, limited government and a very controlling government.
Right.
And that's what that is. The two aren't even on the same planet.
Well, you make a great point that it's more of a limited government versus people that actually believe in a much more socialistic, and as we know, people that are extremely socialist, you get to the point of almost being communist.
Yes.
Because they start talking about, well, then this business needs to be taken over. The medical business needs to be taken over. Pharmaceuticals need to be run by the government because mm-hmm. they become too expensive. This has become too expensive. Oil companies when the gasoline was high, that needs to be nationalized. You
right.
see that happen in socialist societies,
mm-hmm.
and the role slowly continues going, and that's why they always say socialism is the precursor in many societies to communism,
mm-hmm.
because that's the argument. Okay, the person's getting screwed by the industry, therefore government needs to run it because government will care for the people.
Well, and that's exactly what, you know, the plan was for Obamacare. They talked about it years ahead of Obamacare. You can't get to a single-payer system in one step.
Right. Obama talked about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You first have to break down the existing system, the employer-based system, which is exactly what they did. It's still broken to the point that the government has to come in, and politically they believe they've got to fund the daylights out of it.
Right.
And if the people, and by the way, I'm not saying that the people of America won't one day vote that way and say, oh, yeah, single payer or whatever it is. In fact, you and I have said at some point we believe we'll get there. I don't know when that will be.
But if you have a full single payer system that isn't just the payer, but the hospitals.
Yes.
And, you know,
controlled
like
by the government.
At that point, you've gone from socialism to communism because you took a private industry and you have, in essence, nationalized it by the government to hopefully produce a better outcome. And what we have seen from societies that have gone full communism on a healthcare system, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. And in his final year of being president, Obama talked about maybe we need to revisit the public-private partnership. Well, how does that work when the private sector doesn't get control of the regulation?
No.
The public sector does. Yep. So the public side of it controls the rules and can print money.
And therefore control.
Yes.
And give unfair competition.
Right. How do you compete with that?
You can't compete. You can't.
There's no way.
So there you go. So that, to James, look, it's just an old argument to us. And the premise is wrong, that if you believe in limited government and therefore the socialism that goes along with that, that you believe in unlimited government, that there is no difference in the morality of it, which is just inaccurate.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Trying to get through the hot summer months with a broken AC system can be miserable and completely unnecessary. With the help of pre-trip inspections and common warning signs, you'll know if your AC system is starting to fail. When your AC starts to die out and problems start occurring internally, your truck will let you know. Pay attention to the following signs that may indicate your AC system needs to be serviced. The air your AC is blowing out is only slightly cooler than the exterior air. Your engine doesn't heat up quickly, nor at all. The air smells musty of mold or mildew. Your heater blows cold air while your AC blows warm air. Knowing these warning signs can help you avoid getting sidelined by a broken AC system this summer.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. We go to William in Grand Island, Nebraska. William, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, guys. Good morning, and congrats. Y'all do a great job. I drive over the road. I try to catch you guys whenever I can.
Thanks.
You know, helps keep me awake on those long nights. And, you know, I agree with just about 99% of what you have to say. I have a couple of possible solutions to some of the issues that we have, and it would take the state's conventions to make it happen, so the people would have to really get involved and exercise their rights as citizens, and put in term limits and do away with the two-party system, because the party system we have right now between Democrats and Republicans, for the vast majority of it, they're the cause of all the issues.
What would you replace it with?
Well, I would say just individuals who want to step up and, you know, say, okay, I'll run for that seat, and with the knowledge that if you're running for Congress or the Senate, you're not going for your per se constituency. You're there for the whole country, so you don't have.
Well, but they no, but the, but they are there for your. I want them to represent me and my district. If they're in the House,
But what that does then, sir, is it puts more emphasis on state and local governments to do the things that are necessary for the people locally.
Well, but those are the people, but they represent me locally. They represent my district. That's somebody that I want to go there in the House and represent me in my home district. I don't want them represent, and I don't want Nancy Pelosi speaking for me.
Understood, but see, that's you made my point right there, is that individuals like Nancy Pelosi were real quick to say, you got to do this.
Because one of the things you say you want to get rid of is lobbyists. And if you had basically at large, every politician was at large, lobbyists would be bigger than they actually are today.
to save society. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. To our last caller, thanks, by the way, for your call. We had to cut you a little short just because of time constraints. But you made some interesting points, and to address them, I just to warn you, you may only be agreeing with us 98% of the time. You know, when you said we need that convention of states to get rid of political parties, that's impossible. You can't get rid of political parties because that goes right to the heart of the First Amendment. You can't get rid of lobbyists because that goes right to the heart of the First Amendment, which is you can petition the government for a redress of grievances. People can band together and form a political party because they have shared beliefs. People can band together to form a lobby group because they have shared beliefs. That's actually what the Constitution guarantees you. The other thing is, when you talk about a convention of states and you talk about getting rid of political parties, you weren't just talking about political parties, because you were talking about, we talked about congressional districts, and you said, well, they shouldn't be representing a district. Well, then you would get rid of Congress.
Yes.
Congress would no longer exist.
Mm-hmm.
The House of Representatives,
right, yes,
would no longer exist, but neither would the Senate. Because if every person in the government is an at-large, you know, like an mm-hmm. at-large, you know, councilman that you know, so you'll have some at-large councilmen in a city council, and then, you know, some that have specific districts. But the fact is, if you had at-large, then, as you pointed out, and as he pointed out, then, Eric, you came back with it. I think, I don't know if you said it on the air or off the air, because the conversation continued when you talked about Nancy Pelosi. Said, yes, but if she didn't represent a district, she'd lose her clout there. And as your point was, well, so would my conservative congressman.
Well, he said, you just made my point, because she wouldn't have that kind of leeway and control. Well, she has control, over her district.
Right.
Now, she can serve on committees or be Speaker of the House. There are a number of things where she can have a little bit greater influence. But the point being is that I don't live in her district. I live in my district. And he was actually making my point, that you're saying I can't vote for my conservative member of the House, and because he's going, essentially at that point, he's not going to represent my district, he's going to represent all districts. Well, not all districts are alike. What you're wanting is this one big nationalism or national approach to the people's concerns. Well, the concerns vary by where we live, and where we live can determine, is often defined by the culture of our state, of our district, of our areas. There are plenty of liberal areas. In fact, we're sitting in a liberal county right now. I live in a liberal county, but my district is red. So when it comes down to, and my state is red, and when it comes down to my politics, they are very red. I don't want this milquetoast approach, because it may sound noble, but at some point, you're going to have no representation. They're all basically, because when you say, well, let's limit let's put term limits on all of them. Well, who would be voting for them? First of all, I would be going to the poll to vote for what? 435 plus another 100? I mean, I'm gonna make the choices on that level. How would you actually do that?
Yeah, I would everybody vote for over 400 members of Congress? And
mm-hmm.
number one, you'd have to destroy. Look, the convention of states is not going to destroy Congress.
No,
he said you need to and that's the whole point. Because what he said was get rid of the political parties. Well, you can't get rid of the political parties. And then when he talked about the fact that people shouldn't be representing a particular part of it. Well, that's the whole basis of the House of Representatives, is that your locality,
yes,
your small little space in this country has a say when it comes to the federal government. That's the whole point,
yes,
is that you do get a say from a small section, that your small rural area may be completely different. As to average people getting in, go to many rural areas and see who their congressman is. Their congressman is somebody who a lot of people know. A lot, mm-hmm, of these districts, you know, you talk about in a major city, you might not. But in a lot of districts, I know a ton of people that ran for Congress,
mm-hmm,
in my lifetime. People have come up to me when I was a local talk show host and asked if I had any interest in running for Congress a few years back. And I said, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, they were always looking for somebody in there. But you go to a lot of special rural areas where you have a ton of Congress people. And these are just people that are businessmen and businesswomen, and they just were involved in doing it. Now, as they rise up and get prominence and get on committees, then they get television. Then you say, well, they're just part of the elite because they're on TV all the time. Well, that's what happens when you get elected to Congress. But Ocasio-Cortez, she was a bartender last year.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's the savior of the Democrat Party.
Right.
Well, think about it. So, again, it sounds nice, but you have to understand that the country was built on, you know, when we look at the, you know, bicameral system that we have, when you have a House of Representatives, when you have a Senate, there was a purpose for all of that. And the point you were making is, if you get rid of the political party, and then we shouldn't have the small districts being represented, then everybody is at large.
Well, keep in mind,
you actually give, having an at large, it's never going to happen, but it's interesting, right, to talk about. Having an at large Congress means lobbyists would even be spending more money and special interest,
well,
to try to influence people.
Because who would they represent?
They're not representing anybody.
Because what you're saying is they represent America. Well, that sounds noble until you don't get what you want.
In my district.
You're not getting what you want because they say they're representing America, which is what? Well, then whatever the majority is. Well, the majority of Americans can't name the three branches of government. So they're going to represent them or you. I want someone, even if the person I vote for doesn't win, I want a system that is set up where I can send one of my neighbors to represent me.
There is no magic bullet.
No. Well, there is because no you got to talk about changing the will of the American people.
Well, the other thing is, we've always had the discussion on lobbyists. People always want to get rid of the lobbyists and special interest.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Let's get rid of the NRA tomorrow. They have zero power.
Right. Right.
They can't band together and they can't support candidates. The NRA is bad and must go. Okay, I'll wait for the response here.
Right. Exactly.
Well, because what we hate, and I've often, we often talked about this, that and we believe that it got one of the members of the band a little bit upset, mm, at us one time. But I talked about a REM concert one time that my buddy went to,
mm-hmm,
and he got free tickets to go to an REM concert, and he the auditorium, and this, my buddy Jeff, who used to work for Caterpillar and sold generators. And they needed emergency generators because REM and the light show needed so much extra power to run their light show. So they said, can you come through for us and we'll give you a couple of tickets to the show?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah. So he went to the show and they were handing out all these things about being against all these lobbyists and being against this and global warming and all this. And Jeff's sitting there saying, there, I've got two diesel generators running outside and they're telling me that I have to use less and to
well,
run their
Lauren
light
David
show.
And Cheryl.
Right.
Cheryl Crow.
And he said, and he brought the book to me before I went on the air that morning, because I was working in New York at that time. And he says, I got to show you this book. And it was a book on all the lobbyist groups we need to get rid of, which was all the conservative lobbyist groups. We said it on there one time. We believed that one of the members of the band heard us talking about it. And then,
mm-hmm,
we got a cease and desist letter to not play their music anymore.
Right.
Now, we could have. We decided if that's your wish. Absolutely. We won't do anything that you don't wish us to do. But we didn't even know that we were playing one of their songs as one of our bumpers.
We play a lot of oldies.
Yeah, we actually got a cease and desist letter, and we believe it was because of the story that we told about them. But again, the point is everybody hates the lobbyists that disagree with them and love the lobbyists that agree with them.
Well, and you ask what a lobbyist is. It may not be somebody or a group that is acting in your interest, but from a professional truck driver. The Owner-Operator Independent Drivers Association works in Washington to help represent owner-operators. Is that a bad thing? I don't think so.
The NRA works for people that believe in the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Should environmental lobbyists be banned if you're somebody on the left?
Right.
Should they have to go?
I mean, if you talk about any given group, group that's out there, industry is going to have, you know, their lobbying groups that will either work in Washington or work to, you know, battle the wrongs. That's one of the things, the other main thing that OOIDA actually does. If they think a company hasn't acted in the best interest of a driver, they will go out, they'll take action. They're kind of one of those call to action groups that represents a group. So not every group or not every organization is going to represent you. But just because you disagree with their cause, you believe they should be gone? Well, that's what the left does.
Right.
That's not what I want.
And that's not the way that the Constitution is set up. The Constitution is set up so people can band together to petition the government and get a redress of their grievances.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter whether it's commercial, whether it's environmental, whether it's on a particular constitutional amendment that you wish to defend,
right,
whether it's a pro-tax, to tax more group, a tax less group.
Right.
And that's the, you know, it's sort of like when Milton Friedman said, you know, what's greed?
Right.
Well,
it's always the other guy.
Oh, there's the other guy that's greedy. I'm not greedy. I always give back my raises. Mm-hmm. I never take my raises, and if I win the lottery, I'll give it back. But it's always the other guy who's greedy.
Remember the Facebook guy recently that said did he earn $500 million in 3 years or something like
right.
that? And he was complaining about it. This is what's wrong with America. Then give it back.
Give it back. You can give it back.
You can do that.
Yeah.
You don't have to keep it.
Don't complain. Give it back.
Right.
Act on
it. Lead the way.
Don't keep it. So, again, I've lived with this for such a long time. That, you know, people believe that there's a silver bullet. And by the way, that's the thing with the whole convention of states. And every time we say that, we get criticized, and it's fine. It's not a silver bullet. You still need the state legislatures. You still need the people to want what you want.
That's what it comes down to, is the will of the American people. Because you talk, some people talk in terms of term limits just to begin with. Well, Nancy Pelosi's district is going to send us, well, the next Nancy Pelosi or someone probably more liberal than Nancy.
Nancy Pelosi, if there's term limits, Nancy Pelosi's out or Ocasio-Cortez is in.
De Blasio. Bloomberg right. out, De Blasio in.
In, right.
You know, I understand we're talking about mayor or, you know, but it doesn't matter. It's the people, it's the makeup of that constituency and that jurisdiction. When they say something or when they want something, that is the will of those people.
We are where we are not because the government infrastructure that has been set up into the Constitution is flawed.
Right.
If we have problems, it's because of the will of the people is wrong.
And everyone makes a big deal about, well, that guy's just doing things to get elected. I kind of like that. I don't like everything they're going to do necessarily, but I like the idea that they know they're going to be beholden to the voter, because the one who says, well, I'm not up for re-election again, they often do what? Shrug their shoulders.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, yeah, there's no silver bullet. And changing the Constitution to change Congress or the First Amendment is not going to happen in a convention of states.
No, it's not. It's, again, and we're getting back to the will of the American people. You know, you're just saying, well, man, if we could just get everybody motivated to... Are you kidding me? I mean, have you looked around lately? I mean, I know certain people are motivated, but there's very few of us. Look at the representation right now on Capitol Hill of conservatives. We have our own little corner, and it's kind of cute. But right now, it's not effective. And why is that?
Not the majority.
It's not the majority.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Welcome. The Wednesday show in the news. We'll get to the mandatory fluff news here in just a little bit. But the news of substance. Eric, if this happened and we weren't in the current environment of just everything, the news cycle changing every day, in the old days, this would have been a story for a week.
Right.
And you know which one I'm talking about. The liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals endorsed the right of individuals to carry firearms in public in a ruling yesterday, striking down a lower court argument that the Constitution only protects the right at home. Quote, this is from the ruling, analyzing the text of the Second Amendment and reviewing the relevant history, including founding era treaties and 19th century case law, the panel stated that it was unpersuaded by the county and state's argument that the Second Amendment only has force within the home. The case resulted from Hawaii resident George Young being denied twice in 2011 as he sought to carry a handgun. Two of the three judges, both appointed by Republican presidents, ruled against a lower court upholding the restriction. Judge Darmond O'Scallion wrote in his opinion that for better or worse, the Second Amendment does protect a right to carry a firearm in public for self-defense. In his dissent, Judge Richard Clifton said states have long allowed for existing extensive regulations of and limitations on the public carry of firearms. We are disappointed in the decision that would undermine Hawaii's strong gun control law and our commitment to protect the public, Hawaii Attorney General Russell Suzuki said in a statement. But we note that Judge Clifton filed a well-reasoned dissent supporting the constitutionality of this law. We intend to consult with Hawaii County and work with them on further action. It is the second time this month that the three-judge panel issued a pro-Second Amendment decision. After backing a lower court's decision last week to suspend California's ban on the possession of large magazines. Activists supported by the National Rifle Association have argued that the state's ban on ownership of magazines holding 10 bullets or more is unconstitutional. I wonder how this will affect the SAFE Act in New York.
Right.
They won a preliminary injunction by a San Diego district court last year and a three-judge panel on the Ninth Circuit backed that injunction last week. Based in San Francisco, the Ninth Circuit has a reputation for being one of the nation's most liberal courts. Critics have branded the court the Nutty Nine or the Ninth Circus Court.
I hadn't heard that one.
In part because many of its rulings have been overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. Alex Pappas wrote this. This is from Fox News, yeah. Just so you know.
Yeah.
Wow. So there you go. News of substance. Everything, well, everything else is usual fluff you heard, so we're going home. Bye. See you later.
Well, I mean, it really does. It's just interesting that it came from the Ninth Circuit. Just amazing, really. I mean, of all the things, right? A Second Amendment issue at the Ninth Circuit comes back very pro Second Amendment.
Yeah, very.
that is bizarre. But that really is kind of the circus, Ninth Circus. That's really how it's been from the Ninth Circuit. The bizarre arguments over the years, where something we believe is very clear in regards to the Constitution, and we think this. Wait a minute. Oh no. We have to say it. We agree with the Ninth Circuit on their decision. Do we have to write this down? Am I dreaming?
Wow. Well, that's what happened. That's why we went from 110 degrees to 98 degrees. Hell froze over.
That's what's happening.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
We only saw like 97 or 98 degrees yesterday, I believe.
Right.
Here, instead of the normal 109, 110 we've been seeing. That's what happened. The Ninth Circuit made that ruling. Hell froze over.
There you go.
It cooled us down.
Yeah.
12, 14 degrees in one day.
What's next?
Well, that's, you know, and people saying, what do you mean? Come on. If hell froze over, the temperature, Texas is quite big.
Now, if the moon turns red, let's say this Friday night, then we'll know. Then we'll know. It's the end of days. Listen to me. Everyone calm down. It's the end of days. Satan is coming back and everything. Arnold's coming back to do movies. It's going to be bad. I'm telling you.
It was on a couple weeks ago. And I
end of days.
I don't know. Why do I love that movie?
Well, what's his name? I forget his name. I just blanked on his name. Gabriel Byrne?
Oh, yeah. Gabriel Byrne. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Is he evil or what? He's
and all he had to do was basically be himself. Right? I was like, man, I never realized how evil Gabriel Byrne is. Listen to me, everyone.
He really is a demon.
Don't look at the moon. Oh, and remember, don't look straight into the moon. You got to have this, you know, this Friday night, you got to have the special glasses.
In other news, Devin Nunes says, I don't blame the FISA judges. I think they were misled by the FBI, as again, he has asked the president to unredact. The major portions of the FISA application. It's interesting because you and I had said on yesterday's show. Yesterday and on Monday's show. Okay. Mm. Keep forgetting it's Wednesday already.
Yeah.
We've said this the last 2 days that the only defense that really Democrats could make from, you know, reading what was unredacted in that FISA warrant. The only argument that they could make was that the redacted parts of it are what contain the damning information on Carter Page and maybe the Trump campaign that wasn't the dossier or the Yahoo News article.
Right.
And lo and behold, that's what happened. That's what Democrats are saying. Well, the whole thing hasn't been unredacted. Well, then are Democrats now wanting transparency? Do Democrats now want the transparency to see what's in there? I don't hear any of them. They're claiming now, well, we haven't seen the whole thing. And probably because so much of it has been redacted, other sources are in there.
Right.
And so don't be so sure. Well, okay, fine then.
Great.
Do what Devin Nunes has said. Don't reveal sources and methods.
Otherwise?
But otherwise, redact it so we can find out, so there's transparency to the American people, and then the Democrats can know that they were right and that the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. Right? Right, Democrats?
Shouldn't be that difficult, right?
And so you should be screaming that we need to unredact it now.
Yes.
And we're not getting that.
Not hearing a thing.
And we're very surprised by that.
Well, this is...
We're shocked.
Because if you're somebody who believes he's not the legitimate president or he didn't win the election legitimately, this is the chance. Right? This is your chance. If there's damaging stuff here to the president, here's your chance. I mean, at the very least. Even if you believe it wouldn't lead to impeachment or whatever. It would certainly might help recreate the blue wave.
Well, wait a minute. If you wish to impeach the president, the only chance you have of impeaching the president is proving that the FBI was and is Mueller is doing an intense investigation into the Trump administration for collusion. And so if the evidence exists that Mueller is using and you're obviously sure that Trump colluded with the Russians, then we should find out all the information that the FBI had on the Trump campaign.
Right.
Correct? Release it.
I mean, this is your chance. Again, Devin Nunes is saying you can do this without revealing sources or methods. What is the harm?
Meanwhile, on the trade front, the EU and the president will be meeting to try and will be here in the States trying to negotiate more messages all across the trade spectrum from the president yesterday. Still have no idea what he wants. He did put out a tweet yesterday that we just hope and pray is what he wants, but it's really different than most things that he says on trade. But he did say, how about Europe and the United States drop all tariffs and subsidies and barriers completely?
Yeah.
Wow, really? Okay, we'd be for that. But the fact is, we don't see anything in the South Korea trade pact. We don't see anything that you were trying to negotiate with Canada or Mexico or even the European Union, because the European Union claimed back in late April, early May, we offered to drop it. You said no. So the president says one thing one day, says another thing the other day, said that drop all tariffs, barriers, subsidies, everything, drop everything, and we'll have free and fair trade. Actually, you'll have free trade. You won't have fair trade. The whole concept of fair trade isn't free trade. So the mixed messages coming from this administration just boggle my mind. I still today have no idea where the president stands on what he wishes to, or the administration and the president stand on what they wish to see in a trade pact. I don't know. I hope it's that tweet, but it doesn't make any sense because it doesn't follow anything that the president has said before. He's been all over the trade spectrum.
Well, and my question would be, are you setting the bar too high? Because if he's talking about removing all barriers, tariffs, subsidies, then are you saying all or nothing?
Well, if he should have been promoting that from day one.
Right.
That should have been day one. I want all, because that we would understand.
Mm-hmm.
When he said that, whenever he talks about fair trade, we can't figure out what he means. Just like when Democrats talk fair trade, they never tell you, well, what does that mean? How would you do that? What would the end game be? The president has talked free trade, but fair trade. Well, if you drop all tariffs, if you drop all subsidies, all barriers, all caps, then it's not the definition of fair trade. It's a definition of free trade. And in all likelihood, if you did that with the European Union and dropped all the tariffs, no subsidies, and nothing, what in all likelihood would happen? Our trade deficit with Europe would go up. Exactly what the president says he doesn't want. He wants a trade deficit to go down.
Because that wouldn't be fair trade. He's talked about that.
Right.
If we've got a deficit, that's not fair.
It's not fair. So I to this day, have no idea where the president stands. It becomes more confusing, even though he, and that's what I'm wondering. Is it a tease? Oh, okay, I'll say fair trade to these people, free trade to these people, fair trade to these people, free trade to this. We talked about during his campaign when he would do that. He would say something to one group and say the opposite to the next group the next night. But the problem is here, you're hurting American workers. You're hurting American farmers. You're hurting American manufacturers. The president came out yesterday and said they plan $12 billion of taxpayer dollars to aid farmers because of all the trade disputes. As some of the farming groups said, we don't want aid, we want trade.
Mm-hmm.
That the problem is, it doesn't matter whether you give us money for our losses today. What matters is we lose the supply chain, and we won't be able to get it back because the world supply chain will say, we can't trust what's going to happen in the United States. We can't trust. That's what you're doing now. We don't know if you want to do that.
Well, just like Mexico said, we're going to get our pork from Canada. Our people aren't going to starve. They're not going to be hurt by this. We'll find new suppliers. Once they find new suppliers, if they trust those suppliers and that supply chain to be there long term and trust the agreement to be long term, why would they go back to the U.S. if they can't trust it?
My problem is you can't get a straight answer from this administration and the president as to what they actually want. And the whole basis of the tariffs to begin with is built, I believe, on the biggest lie of substance that the president has had so far in his administration. And I vehemently object to that. You don't play games with people's economic well-being unless you explain to them specifically why, and he has not done that.
What's the goal?
We asked that today. Nobody can answer that question. No one.
Well, until the president does.
Until the president is right.
It's impossible to answer it.
Right. And people, you know, we have stopped the, well, it's for fair trade. What does that mean? Nobody can explain it. 866-90-RED-EYE.
When trade disputes really began to boil over and it looked like the people that would be most hurt would be farmers, President Trump said,
we'll make it up to them.
And today, this announcement is a fulfillment of that promise.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue telling reporters,
the Department of Agriculture will be authorizing up to $12 billion in programs, which is directly in line with the estimated $11 billion impact of illegal tariffs on agriculture.
It's a three-program plan, two of which look to be ramped-up versions of current programs. One has USDA buying up surplus food crops, giving them to food banks and other nutrition programs. The other one is a program aimed at developing foreign markets. But the one that will take the lion's share of the $12 billion is a new one Purdue calls the Market Facilitation Program, which will
provide payments incrementally to soybeans, sorghum, corn, wheat, cotton, dairy, and hog producers.
Brad Carman with the Farm Service Agency told reporters on that program,
we have a little homework to do.
He anticipates sign-up starting sometime around Labor Day and running several months. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. The firing coming up here of that movie director, mm-hmm. the Guardians of the Galaxy director, who was fired by Disney last week after they discovered the tweets. And you've got people like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and others coming to his defense. There was actress Selma Blair urging people to sign a change.org petition demanding they rehire him. Mm. Have you seen what he actually tweeted? Mm. My God, we'll have that coming up.
For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
Record-setting high heat continues in the west. Las Vegas today will be at 114 degrees. The forecast high for Los Angeles, 100. Phoenix, 115. Nearing 100 in Portland. San Diego, 90. Five cities in the San Diego forecast area broke heat records, including Palm Springs on Monday, 119 degrees. And over the next 7 days, I don't show any rain for the state of Washington, Oregon, or most of California. Your 5 to 7 day rain totals put the majority of the moisture in Florida, the coastal Carolinas, up through the Delmarva Peninsula, into eastern Pennsylvania, and upstate New York. We'll see just around an inch of rain for the Midwest over the next 7 days, same for the South as well. Add Dallas to the list of cities with triple digits today, 102, Chicago 83, 80 in rain for New York City, a chance of rain in the Big Apple through the weekend. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Scare people. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
I don't think so.
Nah.
Yeah. He's Eric, I'm Gary. I just shake my head, but NBA Hall of Famer Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has issued a warning to fellow liberals against intolerant excesses in their politically correct purge of Hollywood. The former basketball great wrote an article for The Hollywood Reporter on Tuesday headlined, Hollywood's new zero tolerance on offensive speech makes zero sense. He warned that zero tolerance of politically incorrect statements was a draconian approach that created an atmosphere of fear of sharing ideas and opinions. Abdul-Jabbar came to the defense of James Gunn, the Guardians of the Galaxy director fired by Disney last week, after the Daily Caller News Foundation and others discovered a series of tweets he reportedly made 6 to 10 years ago on subjects such as rape and pedophilia. If we start going back through Disney movies in the past, how much blatant sexism, racism, and homophobia will we find? Wrote Abdul-Jabbar, the NBA former star turned liberal political pundit, concluded companies quick to fire seem more interested in promoting a memorial to their virtue than attacking the systematic problems that would address putting more people of color, women, and LGBTQ people behind the camera and in executive positions. On Sunday, actress Selma Blair urged people to sign a change.org petition demanding Disney rehire Gunn. That petition had more than 265,000 signatures as of Tuesday. I've read some of the tweets. I do not believe Disney will respond in a positive way to a change.org petition and hire him back. Gunn apologized for the tweets on Thursday, explaining, many people who followed my career know when I started, I viewed myself as a provocateur, making movies and telling jokes that were outrageous and taboo. He added, I've developed as a person, so has my work and my humor. Hmm. Now, I had read about this, but I hadn't seen any of the tweets. I saw it and I went, oh, okay, blah, 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 some Hollywood, whatever. And then I saw the tweets, some of the tweets. Media outlets reporting some of the tweets that he got fired and that got him fired was, quote, I like when little boys touch me in my silly place. End of quote. Another quote here. I remember my first NAMBLA meeting. It was the first time I felt okay being who I am. End of quote. NAMBLA is the National American Man-Boy Love Association. The best thing about being raped is when you're done being raped, it's like, phew, this feels great, not being raped. Laughter is the best medicine. That's why I laugh at people with AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
End of quote. There you go. Just a few. And there's
well, it's many more. This mindset that being shocking is funny. And I don't know what his inspiration for it was, other than let's be as shocking as I can possibly be and try and make people laugh. Well, A, you're writing it, so there's no inflection. B, it's not funny. Now, sometimes,
by the way,
jokes can be shocking and funny.
Yes, that's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
That's humor?
Right, because the inspiration would be what? I mean, if you like self-deprecating humor, we all get that, right? I'm a big doofus or whatever it is. I mean, there's a lot of that on stage when you go to a comedy show or in a movie or whatever your, you know, whatever form of entertainment where there's comedy. But in this case, what are you looking to do? The only thing you're looking to do is make people gasp. That's not funny.
I don't think that I could have held any of the jobs that I have held in any company that I've ever worked for as a talk show host if I had tweeted those things in the past. Then not one of my companies, if that came up, would say, "Oh yeah, that's okay, Gary. You know, it's you know we know you were joking."
Because here's the thing:
it's their image. They're concerned about.
It's not that anybody believes that he is this kind, behaves this way as he writes. That's not the point. The point is who do you want at the helm of projects? Who do you want in a position of decision making? Well, Disney decided clearly this is not the guy because he doesn't have the critical thinking skills. If he thought this was funny, that's desperation. Right. And it doesn't matter how long ago it was. You can say, well, I've developed and I've, well, that means what? Not, again, that anybody believes the guy is a pedophile. It's about whether he has any critical thinking skills.
And it's also the organization that you work for. And mm-hmm. and by the way, just...
Yes, on the other side of that.
Wait a minute. We can answer that with experience. We worked for Disney.
Mm-hmm.
If we had said those things because they believe it's a liberal purge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we worked for Disney, and it was funny because when we worked for Disney, we were talk show hosts, did the exact same thing that we do now.
Mm-hmm.
And people would call up and say, you guys work for the conservative corporate... We work for Disney.
Mm-hmm.
But we never had any problem working for Disney being conservatives. But I guarantee when we were working for Disney, if that came out, we would not have had jobs anymore.
Right.
So it's not just attacking, you know, liberals for saying that, knowing the policy of what Disney was promoting.
Mm-hmm.
For their company and what they wanted their image to be, that would have not been acceptable from anyone in the creative process who is part of the public media of Disney.
Right.
Wouldn't have been acceptable.
Right.
Would have been unacceptable. So I wasn't shocked by it when I saw it was, you know, was Disney and I saw what he wrote. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, might there be companies that have... you know, shock radio shows and shock TV shows, that's what they do all the time,
mm-hmm.
on cable or whatever, where this exists, that would be okay with it? Probably.
Yeah, if he wanted to go full on Andrew Dice Clay or whatever it is and be a shock comedian, there's probably an audience for that, I guess.
Because I don't subscribe to the premium channels, but it was, I don't know, 3-4 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And it was free Showtime, and it was like the last special of Dice Clay from Vegas.
Right.
I said, okay, I got to just see what he's doing. And it was absolutely filthy, and it wasn't funny.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't funny. It just went. It's like, oh man, it's just
right.
It just well, it was disgusting. I'm thinking, wow, his career's done. I don't think he's ever had another one since.
Yeah, in terms of the stand-up?
Stand-up, yeah.
He did a, there was a kind of a show where he kind of played himself on one of the HBO or Showtime. And I think they're ending that or just ended it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that was on a few years. But the fact of the matter is again, what is it that is going to be the direction of your career? Again, if this guy wanted to, you know, be a shock comedian, I guess he could go out and see if there's an audience for that. See if people laugh, see if people want to show up at comedy clubs, and to see if somebody wants to do a movie based on that kind of humor. Go for it. But shocking isn't necessarily funny. Sometimes you can be both. But this is that low-hanging fruit attempt, basically. Let me say the most shocking and disgusting thing I possibly can, or write it, as in this case, and that's where I'll get the laugh. I'll get people stirred up. I'll be provocative. Nope, you're just being stupid. Good luck on the unemployment line.
Yeah, and we don't want to. But I wasn't shocked by this. And a lot of people came to his defense and said Disney was wrong. And I went, sorry.
Even Ben Shapiro.
Yeah. I would, you know, what? It was wrong. It was their decision.
Their company, they're going to run their company.
Right. It was their decision. It wasn't a wrong decision. It was a decision.
Yep.
And all I know is when we work for Disney or any other of the companies that I've worked for or you probably work for, if that came up, odds are we wouldn't have a job.
Yep.
And most people in broadcasting, irrespective of your politics, even if it came up before the so-called, whenever this zero tolerance for offensive speech from Hollywood came up, in all, if this would have happened 5 years ago, odds are you have gotten fired, too.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, the people's tolerance is different than whatever a tolerance by a company would be. Company has the right to do whatever they want to do.
Right.
I can agree or disagree with it. I can also see the logic in it. I can also see their right in doing it. That's up to them.
Yeah,
they make that decision.
If I'm going to defend zero tolerance on speech, probably not going to use this as an example.
No. Again,
if
he wanted to revive that old comedy career and he wanted to go out on the road using this kind of humor, go for it. Go see if there's a market for it.
So I don't believe that it's the petition's going to work. I do not believe he will be employed by Disney. Maybe somebody else will hire him down the road. I don't know. I don't believe it will be Disney.
No.
Disney.
Nope.
By the way, latest poll out, a majority of people think Russia has dirt on President Trump.
I have dirt on President Trump.
By 51 to 35%.
He had an affair. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I have some dirt on him.
By a 51 to 35% margin, U.S. voters are convinced the Russian government has dirt on Trump, according to a Quinnipiac University national poll.
I have dirt on Hillary Clinton. Let me know if you need any. On President Trump. What does that even mean?
That outfit she was wearing the other day.
What is going on?
Somebody explain that, please.
I don't know.
Just explain that.
I don't know. Someone was asking, okay, because it's not a hospital gown, but it does look like pajamas. It looks like a gown that you would wear around the house.
And again, people can do whatever they want. I wonder.
Well, I understand it's summertime, but
what style? I mean, when somebody like that, when you go out, it's like, well, this is what I want to project. This is the style. What are you attempting to project by wearing that?
I don't know. It's like I was in an airport the other day and I saw a grown man walking down the hall wearing pajama bottoms and hugging a pillow while he was walking on his way to the gate. And I thought to myself, man, did you lose your mommy? What happened?
He's got a director's interview in Hollywood with Disney.
Probably.
866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL premium diesel fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Finally, a new poll out. The anti-establishment mindset and movement is here to stay within American politics.
Mm.
It's a long-term thing,
yeah,
is what pollster and Harris ex-CEO Dritten Nesho said on Tuesday. I think Bernie Sanders did well for exactly the same reasons as President Trump did well. He ran as an outsider candidate. So, maybe in 2020, it could still be Ocasio-Cortez.
I guess we'll see. Gary, getting some breaking news this morning. Sergio Marchionne, who engineered the auto industry's merger between Fiat and Chrysler, has died at the age of 66.
Wow.
The news had come out recently that is he was in grave condition and his health was deteriorating rapidly to the point that the company named a new CEO over this past weekend. He had been apparently experiencing some problems after shoulder surgery, is what the company is saying. But Sergio Marchionne, dead at the age of 66.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.